content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the National Garden Association e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, the North Carolina State Extension Gardener website, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. We'll start with the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. This article is titled Winter Vegetable Gardening for Mild Climates by Dave Whittinger. Where we live in Texas, many of the annual food crops that we like to eat are sensitive to heat and long days, and they therefore can't be grown during most of what we call the growing season. Spinach and lettuce get scorched by sun, broccoli quickly bolts into flower, and many other plants just sit and pout, refusing to grow. The solution to this is winter gardening. When the days get short and the shadows are long, we start getting serious about growing these winter delicacies. But what about freezing weather? The great thing about winter vegetables is they don't get killed by frost. In fact, many winter vegetables can survive temperatures into the teens. Many plants, especially lettuce, will lose some of their leaves to a really bad freeze, but the plant itself will survive and soon send up new leaves. The decreased hours of sunlight do mean they grow a little more slowly than you'd like, but if you're patient, you can pull off some impressive gardening during the dead of winter. Lettuce. This leafy green can only be grown in the winter for us, as mentioned above. It's also somewhat weak against severe frost. We like to start our lettuce indoors in late fall and transplant into the garden as little plants. Keep them well watered, and if the temperatures go into the 20s or below, consider using a frost blanket to protect them. As the days begin to lengthen in January, they will start growing, and you'll be eating nice salads in late January and beyond. I treat spinach exactly the same way as lettuce, though I find it doesn't need nearly the same kind of protection from freezes. We love the spinach variety and find it grows quickly and just sits and waits for us to harvest and eat it whenever we want it. These leafy vegetables are small and unassuming plants, and they can be grown in unusual places. Do you have a dormant flower garden? That's a fine place to grow some winter vegetables. Most varieties of lettuce are beautiful, with striking colors and interesting patterns, and would provide an excellent ornamental choice for winter. Peas are a crop that we can never seem to grow enough of. These delicate garden vegetables are much more challenging to grow because they do get bitten by frost and get set way back if cold temperatures punish them before they have had a chance to get some good growth. We direct seed these during late winter at the very end of January or early in February. They will grow nice vines for a couple of months and reward us with a great harvest in April. We grow snap peas, sugar snap, in a heliculture raised bed that lies between the house and our milking barn, where we walk past it twice a day. The peas are so sweet when eaten raw, we nearly never bring this harvest indoors. We will often pick a handful on the way to the barn and munch on them while performing our milking chores. The children relish being turned out on a row of peas to eat their fill. Winter is also the time for most root crops. Radishes and turnips are easy to grow. Direct seed where you want them and you'll be harvesting within a month. Radishes especially are an excellent vegetable to let children grow. The early return provides a positive encouragement to the little gardeners in your life. People are often surprised to learn you can grow carrots all through winter. Start them in very late summer or early fall by direct sowing the seeds right among your summer vegetables. They'll germinate and start to grow, but remain very small until the weather turns cool, and then start putting on the real growth. All winter they'll sit and grow and can be harvested. And in the early to mid-spring, they'll put on the real final growth. In addition to the periodic snacking through winter, we like to pick them all at once in late spring, clean them, and put them in the freezer for use in cooking through the rest of the year. Although I love the flavor of carrot, I can never seem to get it to grow really well for us. My wife, Trish, has enjoyed great and consistent success, however, with carrot. Ducus carota, Danvers half long. Many people like to grow radishes and carrots together. You seed them both in the same place, and the taste and the fast-growing radishes will quickly remind you where you sowed the carrots. This is especially helpful because carrots are frustratingly slow to germinate, sometimes taking a month or longer before they finally emerge. Potatoes and onions are planted about the same time for us in late January. We always take the easy route and obtain the seed potatoes and onion starts from the local feed store. The potato plants will send up new growth as soon as the warmer temperatures return. We always grow the potato Kennebec with great success. Broccoli brassicas, of course. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and a constellation of interesting cabbage varieties. Kohlrabi, the list grows on. And all these cold crops grow great during winter for us in the South. We like to grow these as starts, germinating them indoors and transplant them into the garden. You can grow them in the fall for an early winter harvest and again in very early spring for an April harvest. Every region is different, and it's hard to give a prescription that fits all gardeners. All Things Plants has an excellent gardening planting calendar you can use. You can enter in your location, and it tells you everything you want to know. When your frosts are expected, what you can grow, and when you should start them. Happy winter gardening! And now from the NC State Extension Gardener, crevice gardens add interest and save water. A crevice garden is a modified rock garden that mimics the gaps in natural rock formations to create crevices in which plants can grow. The stones in a crevice garden are stacked vertically on edge, one behind the other instead of horizontally. The spacing creates crevices and plants grow between the stones. Often the plants are alpine, desert, or miniature species, as xeric landscaping principles are used to reduce the need for irrigation. The soil is modified to include a mix of topsoil, grit, perlite or gravel, compost, and slash or sand to promote water retention when water is limited and drainage when water is plentiful. Crevice gardens work in many different areas, from small, irregular-shaped spaces, like where the crevice garden at Guilford County Extension Center's demonstration garden is placed, to larger areas, like the crevice garden at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. These gardens also provide an architecturally stunning addition to the landscape, with the different heights and textures of the stones mixed with plants that have different colors and textures. To begin, look at the site where the garden will be installed and outline a rough shape to determine the length and width of the space so the stone size can be determined. Stone selection is an integral part of the design and will be a lasting feature in the garden, so choose wisely. Flat stones work best, and colors can include reds, grays, and even hues that sparkle. Don't forget to look at the edges as well, because the peaks will add visual interest to the garden. To install the garden, dig trenches and set the stones in the surrounding natural soil. Large pieces can be supported by small rocks. Then pack clay around the pieces to support. Next, add soil to the crevices. A soil mix of one part garden soil, one part mushroom compost, and one part perlite, sand, or permatil is a common mixture used to promote drainage. Tuck small plants into the crevices and place larger plants around the edges or in large openings. When selecting plants, note that most crevice gardens include plants that like full sun and thrive in well-drained soil and even drought. Also check for hardiness, texture, foliage, and bloom time and color so that there is something interesting in the garden throughout the year. Succulents and herbs work great, as do cold hardy cacti. Now, smart gardening. Sheet mulching. Sheet mulching is a smart gardening technique that provides multiple benefits to the garden and gardener. This technique saves labor while enriching the soil. Sheet mulching, also called sheet composting and lasagna gardening, involves layering of organic materials in a similar ratio as for a compost pile to prepare a new planting area. To establish a new planting area, remove any ground cover first. Use a garden spade or a broad fork to pierce the soil and lightly loosen it. Add a layer of cardboard or newspaper on top of the loosened soil and moisten with water until damp. Next, add a 2-inch layer of a carbon-rich material on top of the cardboard or newspaper layer. For example, straw or dry leaves work well. Then add a 2-inch layer of nitrogen-rich materials such as grass clippings, kitchen scraps from fruits and vegetables, and other plant material. Alternate layers of carbon-rich and nitrogen-rich material until the mulch reaches 1.5 to 3 feet in height. The gardener must employ patience with sheet mulching, as biodegradation requires about 6 months. Sheet mulching is complete when the layers are indistinguishable and the material has a fresh, sweet aroma. Once cured, the sheet mulched area is ready for planting and is weed-free. Fall is a great time to use sheet mulching, especially if you are unable to add cover crops to your garden crop rotation. If you sheet mulch in November, you will be ready to plant in May, just in time for warm soil temperatures. When you smother weeds and add organic materials to your soil with sheet mulching, plantings have a head start with added nutrients, improved soil tilth, and less competition. Smart gardening will save you time and aching muscles, and it is likely to improve your harvest. And now, food production, growing fruit trees. Growing fruit is an option for anyone in North Carolina, though the types of fruit you may grow may vary depending on your location. In the North Carolina Piedmont, we can produce a variety of fruits, such as apples, figs, pears, persimmons, peaches, and plums, to name a few. Growing fruit trees requires a time commitment, and here are a few steps for success. Site selection is a crucial and often overlooked component. Consider available space and available sunlight. Is there anything that will interfere with tree planting and growth? This might include buildings, other trees, power lines, and other utilities such as cable, internet, phone, gas, water, and sewer. Before digging, call North Carolina 811, which will contact the relevant companies to mark infrastructure that could be damaged or cause you damage during digging. Sunlight is critical for fruit production, and fruit trees acquire a minimum of 6 hours of direct sun per day. So ensure that neither other trees or structures are casting shade on the proposed growing area. Always reference your soil sample report to identify what, if any, lime needs to be added to the soil. A soil pH of 6.0 to 6.5 is optimum for fruit tree growth. If you have questions about soil sampling, contact your North Carolina Cooperative Extension County agent. Now the fun part, picking which tree to grow. Pick the one you or your family will enjoy growing and eating. For more information on fruit trees, see the Tree Fruits and Nuts chapter of the North Carolina Extension Gardener Handbook and the North Carolina State Extension Comprehensive Resources for Fruit Trees. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine. planting a woody winter wonderland by Bree Arthur. The possibilities are endless when it comes to designing and planting a landscape abundant with winter interest. Here in the Southeast, we have so many gorgeous plants to choose from. Winter really is a time for the bones of your garden to shine. As a former propagator and grower of trees and shrubs, woody ornamentals are my first love. Having grown up in Michigan, where winters are white and frozen, seeing things come to life in the off-season will never cease to amaze me. Boasting fragrant, colorful blooms, berries, and interesting bark, these recommendations will make your winter extra special. Winter interest flowers. Consider planting a collection of camellias for dynamic winter blooms. Camellias are a classic plant of the South, brought to the U.S. by early European explorers from their native Asia. Camellias are well suited for the climate and soil of the Southeast. They thrive in acidic conditions and need to be planted high to ensure proper drainage. Invest in fall and winter blooming varieties to extend your flowering season from August to April. The October Magic Camellia Sesenqua series offers a wide selection of colors and growth habits. These generally start blooming in mid-autumn and can flower through the holidays in mild climates. As for the winter blooming camellias, you have over 25,000 registered varieties to choose from. To make it decision a little easier, here is my top five can't live a happy life without selections. Crimson Candles, Jack's, Nuccio's Cameo, Royal Velvet, and Sea Foam. Winter is also a time for incredible fragrance, both outside and in. One of my favorite winter habits is walking through the garden collecting small flowering branches for indoor arrangements. Bush Honeysuckle is a sweet addition to a property border that will fill the air with sweet perfume. Other winter showstoppers include flowering apricots. These small trees add a pop of color when you least expect it, and range in colors from white to dark red. Look for varieties such as Peggy Clark or Kobe for beautiful, fragrant pink blossoms in the middle of winter. Of course, no one should be without the unstoppable Edgeworthia crescenta, also known as paper bush. This deciduous shrub is a perfect landscape specimen, complete with bright yellow, super fragrant blossoms in the midst of winter. Related to Daphne adora, paper bush is more tolerant of wet soil, making it a better, long-lived option for the southern landscape. I will never tire of fragrant tea olives, Osmanthus fragrans, whose tiny white flowers mark the start of the cool season. The orange-flowered selection, Aurantiacus, bloomed for weeks and provided nectar for diverse pollinators. I have also grown to depend on trees and shrubs that provide interest from their bark. Take, for example, the one and only coral bark maple, Sengu Kaku. The bright red new growth of the branches look incredible against an evergreen backdrop or a clear blue winter sky. They are equally impressive when used in cut flower arrangements, wreaths, and other indoor holiday displays. Another favorite shrub with an interesting branching habit is Harry Lauder's walking stick. This hazelnut relative makes an impressive specimen in the landscape and offers dynamic, curly branches for table settings. Exfoliating bark is another way to create seasonal interest. Natchez crepe myrtle is a great example of a tree that offers year-round beauty from its smooth, mahogany-colored trunks. Stuartia species, Chinese elms, and the winter-flowering cornice moss all have bark that peels to show color variation. My all-time favorite bark specimen is Acer triflorum, a small statured tree with butter yellow fall color and the greatest trunk texture of all time. As a holiday tradition, many people harvest berries from their holly trees to decorate for the season. Winterberry hollies is an ideal specimen for southern gardens, boasting an upright habit with leaf-free branches covered in red, yellow, or orange berries. Other specimens with colorful berries include Nandina, which many home landscapes already have planted. These Asian native berries are best harvested for the holidays, preventing any potential invasive seeding or harm to passing birds in late winter. Conifers are the most reliable source for winter interest foliage. From dark green boughs of traditional holiday firs to bright yellow branches of curdalo, southern-tolerant conifers such as cryptomeria, junipers, and arborvitae are an easy way to create screening, habitat, and easy-to-access holiday decorations. Stuff containers and window boxes with conifer branches to add long-lasting color and texture with no water needed. The addition of bulbs and lights will show your holiday spirit. Broadleaf evergreens like the native southern magnolia, Magnolia grandiflora, are fabulous additions to property borders. Look for interesting varieties like teddy bear with round leaves or little Jim that offers a long blooming season. Nothing says Christmas in the South like cut magnolia branches. An unexpected pop of tropical texture is Trachycarpus fortunae, also known as the hardy windmill palm. This is an excellent winter interest specimen for the landscape and as a cut foliage addition to containers. The fronds look great year-round, especially with a dusting of snow. This winter, I encourage you to create a woody winter wonderland in your landscape. Indulge in these plants and more, and impress everyone who passes by your home. And now, from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum, mulching out weeds and weather. You can't keep taking out of the ground. You have to put something back. That was said by Nick Wexeth. When it comes to gardening, a person's choice of even the most basic methods has as much to do with his or her temperament, philosophy, and sense of aesthetics as it does with convenience, availability, and affordability. Mulching is one of those tasks that folks seem to accomplish according to their personal tastes. Practically speaking, mulch shields plants from temperature extremes, keeps the soil moist, maintains better tilth, and helps prevent erosion. A summertime mulch keeps the plant roots cooler and smothers weeds. Winter mulching shelters plants from drying winds, insulates plant roots from cold, and helps prevent frost heaving when soil alternately thaws and freezes. Ideally, mulch also makes the garden more attractive. A wide variety of ground covers make good mulches. Common natural mulches are bark, wood chips, sawdust, cocoa poles, pine needles, hay, straw, leaves, weeds, compost, even a dust layer of scratched-up surface soil. Manufactured materials such as plastic and polyester have also become increasingly popular. Which mulches are best? Although guidelines exist for mulches especially suited for individual growing conditions, all rules in this matter are flexible and personal preferences reign. For example, if gadgetry fascinates you and new labor-saving techniques add variety and interest to your gardening, you may enjoy trying some of the newly developed plastic and fabric mulches on the market. On the other hand, if you like your methods to be as earthy as possible, the synthetics may repel you. If such is the case, tap nature's cycles by mulching with grass clippings or straw. As you'll see in some of the tips that follow, you can help both your garden and the environment by recycling trash into garden treasure, mulching with items that might otherwise wind up in a landfill. Weighing the advantages and disadvantages of various materials involves practical consideration as well. For example, if your summers tend to be cool, plastic will give many crops a boost by absorbing heat and transferring it to the soil. In really hot weather, though, plastic can be uncomfortable for walking and kneeling on. Synthetics offer other benefits, too. While mulches made of old straw, hay, or weeds may introduce unwanted seeds, synthetic ones avoid these problems. Imagine baby plastics sprouting up all over. If you're prone to allergies, the synthetics aren't likely to make you sneeze or make your eyes water. Synthetics, however, do nothing to replenish the soil. While most natural mulches eventually decompose over time, also hay, bark, and sawdust offer greater flexibility. You can pile up a little extra when a flopping plant needs extra support, or push some aside to install another plant, both without disturbing nearby mulch. On the other hand, organic mulches deplete nitrogen from the soil, a drawback biologist Carl Korschen will tell you how to prevent. Grass clippings. It's okay to mix grass clippings into the soil to give it better tilth, but do not use it as a surface mulch. It tends to clump into a dense, soggy mass when it gets wet, advises La Crosse, Wisconsin nurseryman Randy Baer. Other views on grass. I take grass clippings and pile them around tomato and garden rows to hold in moisture and hold down weeds, says Ed Wohan, who gardened in Galesburg, Illinois for 16 years. Hay. Ruth Ann Davis does double duty as a gardener. She maintains a garden 6 months of the year in her Tucson, Arizona home and another up north where she and her husband operate a resort. You don't need access to a farm or stable for hay, she says. I find out when my county crew will be mowing the side of the road and follow with a rake and pitchfork. Although the freshly mown green material does introduce weed seeds, it makes a good mulch anyhow because it adds a little extra moisture. If water is scarce, as it is in my case, that is a valuable consideration. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. You've been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long till next time. If you have any comment or questions, call 919-919-832-5138. 919-932-5138.